Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace coming at you here. I've almost lost track of what day it is. I almost said on a Monday or
Wednesday.
It's Tuesday.
Tuesday.
I had to think twice before I said it.
So you're just going to skip over Tuesday. You're like, it's Monday or Wednesday.
With all these games that I'll get back into the routine, but we had Friday games, Sunday games, and I was thinking, it just throws me off, especially the Friday, Sunday. I think Sunday is Saturday. I think Friday is Saturday. It throws me off. So I'm still getting back to the schedule.
Those Preds games where they ended around like 1 a.m., 2 a.m. on the radio, I was like,
what time zone are you in? What time is it back home?
Yeah.
What time is it where you are?
I got home once, I think game one or something like that. It was, late 2 a.m. I was like, oh, is today Saturday? I can sleep in tomorrow. No, it's Monday morning. I'll be back here in about 5 hours.
It was so funny. Like, when they won game two, it was exciting. And I was like, oh, man, this is great. Let's keep talking about it. And I'm like, it's 1 o'clock back home. Like,
yeah, man.
People got to go to bed. Yeah. Like, people have work tomorrow.
Willie, they don't want to talk anymore.
Just wait until tomorrow.
They don't want to listen.
I'll catch you tomorrow, Willie.
Exactly.
I'm going to bed. I'm like, what about this? This was a great game.
But you had a lot to talk about that day, Willie. You had a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
NC Mace.
Well, and we have a lot to talk about today going forward. The Predators are going to have their quote-unquote end of the season press conference, which I think anybody who's been following the team will be all ears to hear what they have to say. And I think, knowing Barry Trotz the way we do, I think he is such a pleasure to listen to because he's open. He will try to answer everything he can, or at least lay out his thinking going forward with the right to change his mind and everything like that. But I think it's going to be a great press conference later today, and it's going to be around 5 o'clock, I would imagine. Caroline, by the way, is filling in for Jared, so she will be anchoring his time slot today. So, and Adam Vingan is going to be with her, so they'll be on the air while that's going on, so they will be setting the table for that. We're going to talk Preds a little bit later in the hour, or in the show, I should say, more like the 12 o'clock hour, and get into some of the stuff that we pieced together yesterday, we're going to try to get as many opinions from the listeners today. I really want to hear, because we sort of gave our own takes yesterday. We didn't get to as many calls and texts as I would have liked, but just because we were laying out a lot of stuff. So today we want to try to set aside some time for you, the listeners, to say, what would you do, right, if you're Barry Trotz? And then we'll hear what Barry Trotz and Andrew Burnett actually say later today.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what Predator fans, think about this team moving forward. What are their opinions on the things they should do? And I think the biggest is, what is their opinion on UC Soros? Obviously, we've been talking about UC for a while now, because the contract is looming. But I would love to hear, especially after, this playoff run, short run that they had, I would love to hear what our listeners think about, UC and the potential of, re-signing them. Do they think, Lankinen should come up, but Skaroff should come up and be a critical part or a viable part in what they do this upcoming season? There's a lot of questions, a lot of unanswered questions that I'm sure fans would love to know, and they'll get a chance to, I'm sure, get a lot of those questions answered when Coach Bruno and Barry talk later on today.
Yeah, so we'll get into that. Soros and your philosophical belief on him, depending on your opinion, is probably at the center of where all this goes. And I had a great hour with Robbie and Rexroad this morning. I came in early, and because we've been talking about doing this, because I've been on their show a few times for a segment, and a segment just isn't long enough sometimes to talk about him. So we really focused in on him for about an hour, and it was a great discussion back and forth. And one thing you come out of there thinking is, it's complicated, right?
Yeah.
It's not simple, and no one opinion, I would say, is the right opinion. There's a lot of ways it can go, but I've got my thought. You've got your thoughts, I think. They're much more open to trading him than I think you or I are. I still am in the seat of you really got to come to the table with something big. Mm-hmm. If I'm really going to listen, I'm not going to trade him for a couple of draft picks just to clear the cap space. I just think he's way too special for that. And I'm still not ready to hand the reins to Yaroslav Askarov. I still think the best way to go is for him to be the apprentice mm-hmm. for a couple years. But we'll get into that a little bit later in the show. We've got Tim Hasselbeck at the bottom of the hour. So we're going to get into some football with him. He's always great to pick his brain. D-Mace, I want to ask you real quick about
yes.
the NBA. It was dawning on me last night, and it, you know, as I've been watching, if you're just a fan of basketball, which you and I both are, mm-hmm. I always love getting into the NBA playoffs at this time of the year. It is such a new changing of the guard mm-hmm. right now. You've got no LeBron. You've got no Steph Curry. And now...
No Giannis.
Mm-hmm. Now you've got the number one star in the game in a big hole, mm-hmm. Nikola Jokic. They're down 2-0. You've got teams like the Timberwolves, OKC, really coming on.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got these new teams, and I'm just wondering how the general fans feel about it, right? I always jump in, whoever it is. I kind of like the new stuff mm-hmm. sometimes, but I wonder how everybody feels about where it is right now. I watched the Orlando-Cleveland mm-hmm. Game 7.
Yeah. And you picked
Obviously,
Orlando.
I picked them in game six. I picked them to win game six to get it to game seven. So I got that right.
Okay.
But that was a series won. All of the home games were won by the home team.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like, obviously, the Darius Garland local connection has me intrigued with Cleveland. But that's a series where you got two interesting young teams where there are not a lot of household names to the casual fan. You're like, oh yeah, Boncero's with Orlando. You know, like the Wagner. Yeah, I remember those guys playing for Michigan. You know, but it's not like they're guys that have been with the same team for a long time and won a lot of playoff games. There's not a lot of that going on. It's a lot of getting familiar with these teams, like the T-Wolves. Right, the T-Wolves are really good, and obviously Karl Anthony Towns is really good, but it's not a team that's had any playoff success for like 20 years.
No, I don't think their last true playoff success might have been with Kevin Garnett, if I'm not mistaken. I know they had Kevin Love on that team, and they had some pretty good teams with Kevin Love, but this is probably the best Minnesota team that I've seen since they've come into the league, honestly. And I know they had some good teams with Kevin Garnett, but this team is just, it's different, led by Anthony Edwards. And
now he's a guy that you may not have watched
y'all
very much,
haven't
but
seen,
wow.
Yeah, if y'all haven't seen this kid play, he is must-watch TV. You think to the west of us is much-watch TV in Memphis when, is on the court?
Ja Morant.
Watch this kid, Anthony Edwards, when he's on the court. He's
a highlight reel.
He's what you want in a NBA player. He plays both ends of the court, and he plays both ends aggressively. He plays it smart. And he has this all-around game. He's sort of in the mode of, and this is how I look at it with him. You had, and I'm not saying that he's like these two guys, but he has the demeanor of these two guys. Mike, Kobe, and now Anthony Edwards.
It's interesting you mentioned that. On the text line, somebody said, Anthony Edwards is Michael Jordan's kid. He's just been hiding it.
That's as funny as you said, that has been out there.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there.
Well, and by the way, I would love to hear some people on this. If you are in on the NBA, or you're like, boy, I've completely lost touch with the NBA because another guy we didn't mention, the T-Wolves just wiped the floor with Kevin Durant in the Suns.
Yeah,
so there's another superstar out in the first round, Kevin Durant. So it really is looking like it's a change in the guard. 615-737-1025 if you want to weigh in on that. But keep going on Edwards, because to me, that's a guy that if you haven't really focused in on him, you need to.
Yeah, you need to. This kid, like I said, I think he has the demeanor in the attitude of a Jordan and a Kobe. But it's now presented in a new package because the way the game is played now, he's unstoppable. He's truly unstoppable. And I know we could say that about a few guys in the NBA, you know, whether it be LeBron, KD, Jason Tatum, Brown, guys like that, Nikola Jokic, Kyrie, Doncic, guys like that that are unstoppable. But this kid, he's unstoppable. And not only that, he plays both ends of the court. Not many of these stars play both ends of the court, and this young man does it. So if you haven't seen the Minnesota Timberwolves play, they're up 2-0. They mopped the floor with Denver the last two games. It wasn't even close. I'm watching Anthony Edwards the first game, and I'm like, they can't stop this kid. I watched the second game minus Rudy Gobert because he had a child. His wife or girlfriend had a child, so he sat out the game. But even without Rudy Gobert, I mean, this team is hard to beat, and they beat them in Denver. It wasn't like they beat them in Minnesota.
They beat them twice in Denver, and I flipped on the game last night thinking,
and it wasn't even close, Bill, Willie. It wasn't close.
When I flipped it on, they were almost up by 30 at the beginning of the second half. And
yes.
I'm thinking, whoa. I mean, it just hit me like a ton of bricks because I was thinking, okay, here's my viewing for the rest of the evening. And I was like, there's nothing to see here. They're not going to make a run. I waited to see if Denver would kind of push back a little bit. They had no answers at all. And this is defending champions.
Yeah, they are. Murray is dealing with a calf injury, I believe. But, I mean, he's still out there balling. He balled that last game, game five, versus the Lakers, and he was hurt then. I know Caldwell Pope is dealing with something. Jokic, he's just tired because he has to play entirely too many minutes. They got – The crazy part about this is that they are doing what the Lakers wanted to do but couldn't do because they didn't have shooters. Minnesota's able to do it. They got big bodies they can throw at Jokic. But not only that, Naz Reid can shoot three-pointers. He's 6'11". You know, you got Anthony Towns. He can shoot three-pointers, and yeah, he's 7 foot.
And that is impressive.
Rudy Gobert can do some things on the outside, but he's more so of a defensive inside guy. So you're throwing three big bodies at him nonstop, and he has to play damn near the whole game in order for them to have a shot to win because they need Jokic out there. But they're throwing them big bodies at him, and it's wearing down on him. I predict this in five because of the way they're throwing these big bodies at Jokic. And it's going to wear them down. And they got frustrated last night. Denver got frustrated because Minnesota was playing damn good defense. And they were on Murray's tail like white on rice. They wouldn't like peanut butter on jelly. Mm-hmm. You know, they wouldn't let him go. They was on him like Gorilla Glue. They wouldn't let him go. And he got frustrated. And that team got frustrated.
I just think it's an interesting time for the league because we're not too far removed from this era, and Nick, you remember it, where you knew it was going to be LeBron versus Steph in the finals, and even before that there were years when LeBron was with Miami, you know,
knew it was going to be LeBron.
There were only three or four teams that you thought could possibly win it. Now the league's kind of entering into this, and analytics I think have something to do with it. You know, there's just a wider range of ways to win. And I think it's fascinating. I kind of like that you're not sure who's going to win. An 8 seed could be a 2 seed.
Exactly.
Or a team with load management or injury issues that ends up being seeded lower might have all of their ducks in a row and be able to beat a higher seed in the playoffs. I like it. I wonder if the league likes it because it was kind of fun for people who are casual fans to say, well, I don't need to watch the regular season. I know when it comes playoff time, let's just see if LeBron gets his team there, and then let's see if Steph gets his team there, and then we'll watch them go head-to-head. It'll be a couple of heavyweights. This year, you could have Minnesota or OKC in the finals.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
That'd be incredible.
That'd be incredible, but is the league going to get the ratings they're looking for with that? Probably not.
Maybe. Probably. I mean,
maybe if they're playing Boston, maybe.
But to your initial,
Boston's kind of the
yes,
one team that's been a contender for a while that's still in there, right? Anybody
yeah,
else?
I mean, to your point, though, about changing the guard, I mean, if that is the narrative in the NBA, this, like, playoffs, I would say embrace that, and then you could basically create your new face for the next generation. I mean, everybody keeps talking about Anthony Edwards, but, like, don't forget about the Nova Knicks, baby. Jalen Brunson.
Yeah, Jalen. He put up 46 yesterday. Yeah.
43.
Was it 43? Yeah. I gave him 3 extra points. He should have had 3 extra points.
They're a fun team to
and
watch.
And they don't. And the crazy part about that, they don't have Julius Randle.
Right. So that's really a credit to them that mm-hmm. they found a way to get to this point. I do wonder what it'll look like if they play the Celtics. And
without Julius Randle.
The other thing you have when you have a New York team in it is you get the atmosphere at Madison Square Garden, which is entertainment
is Willie,
unto itself.
This is good for the NBA.
That would be great Knicks, to have the Knicks in there.
The Knicks, the Celtics.
Because if you have OKC in the final or Minnesota, you better have Boston or New York from the East to really balance it out.
A marquee team. Yeah, and a big market for sure.
Yeah, so but I would love to hear what you know. Not
because the Knicks are a fun story, but they don't have the Nova Knicks. That's a great story, but they don't have that marquee star. Like,
well, they got Brunson is in.
Okay,
Brunson,
but Brunson
has become
he is becoming that.
Yeah, he's.
But
becoming
if you
that.
Went and asked the casual fans,
they
in Nashville, would you say, or Jalen Brunson?
Yeah,
tell me
Brunson,
about him.
Yeah, unless they follow college and they followed Nova and you know sort of been following him.
You got to know some basketball,
the Mavericks and whatnot, not a Knicks.
Because he's been
so
he's
you're
been
right.
amazing.
Yeah, he has been.
Like, he's been like Oscar Robertson kind of numbers, right?
Yeah, like I'm a Knicks fan, but like. I don't really try to follow – I do try to follow the NBA, but just there's so much going on. And then, like, the Knicks are finally in the playoffs for once in, like, what, 5-10 years? Like, this is incredible. So I'm dialed
with
in.
With a real
watching.
Chance. Yeah, they made it last year, but this is – they've been building this for a while. They've been so bad for a while.
They got rid of Obi Toppin. And, like, when they signed Brunson, I was like, I don't know how this is really going to pan out. And he's – like D-May's saying, he's developed into this elite playmaker that is a marquee name for the Knicks.
Well, they're saying that – and this is what is starting to sort of circulate, that he may be the best free agent signing ever.
Brunson.
Because of, you know, where he started and then, you know, where he's at now, and nobody predicted him to be. They knew he was a good player, but they didn't predict he would be able to carry a team. No way, no how. He went there to pair up with Julius Randle and some of these young guys to sort of build this team up. He wasn't supposed to be the marquee player, but he ended up being the marquee player. Remember, they drafted the kid Barrett out of Duke, and he was supposed to be that next guy. They ended up trading him to Toronto, I believe. Yeah, they traded him to Toronto and got him out of there. But Jalen Brunson has come in. And since he's been a Knick, this team has been totally different. This team was in the dumps for a long time.
Oh, my gosh.
The owner was horrible.
Couldn't get out of their own way.
You kick one of the most iconic Knicks out of the building.
Charles Oakley,
Charles Oakley, It's like
the Predators were in New York the day after that happened. It was so funny. The Predators were playing the Rangers. Uh-huh. And I was asking everybody, where is it? What row, section was it where they threw Charles Oakley out? It was so funny. But, yeah, they were just – this was only a couple years ago.
This was only a couple of years ago.
This mess.
Exactly. And now to see where they are, and it's because, one, they changed head coaches. They got a new head coach. And then them adding Brunson to the mix. I think he is the main source of why this Knick team has been able to turn around.
This is another thing that I see. You guys tell me if you agree before we wrap up this segment. This is my invitation to all of you listening to give it a chance, right? If this is we're in that part of the sports calendar, especially now that the Predators are out, the draft is over. I mean, there's only so much that I care to talk about the rookie minicamp. You know, all of these things with the Titans, and we'll talk plenty of Titans, don't worry. But I love these games. I love flipping on the TV. Here's why I think the NBA is really compelling, though. It's not the superstars or whatever. We've talked about there's a little more parity, but the product itself is really good. They've figured it out. And I don't know, like, when somebody scores 50, I'm like, all right, that's fine. And you say, well, that's the most by whatever. Well, you got to remember, people are scoring more now. But that's kind of fun, right? You got a game that most of the time is going to be 118, 115. And the shots and the plays these guys are making, it's really entertaining stuff. And it dawned on me when we were watching The Last Dance, There were some grinding kind of games that ended up like 81-80.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't the smoothest flowing basketball like it was in the 80s, mm-hmm. right? Where it was Showtime and the Celtics. So I think they found a good groove here where you flip on a basketball game, even if you don't know the players and the teams, you're going to be like, wow, this is fun. It's back and forth. No lead is safe. If you know, guys are hitting great shots, big dunks, like the flow, the product looks good.
Yeah, and it's good that, and you said something, you just said something that I think fans, this is one reason why, you know, I love basketball and I think you should, because nothing is ever out of reach in basketball.
Yeah.
Like,
no lead is safe.
Even though Denver was down damn near 30, and they were 30 at one point, they went on a run, and if they could have cut it right, I think it was right before entering into the fourth quarter. It was the third quarter, somewhere around there. Had they gotten it down to under 20, then I think it would have been a whole new ball game. But the minute Denver makes a run, I think they went on an 8-0 run, and they cut it right to 22 or something like that, or 20. And then Anthony Edwards in Minnesota just applied the defense, tightened the grip, and they went on a run, and they separated themselves once again from the Denver Nuggets. And if you're watching this team was the best defensive team in the NBA during the season, and it seems like they are the best team in the NBA in the playoffs. Shaq said it right yesterday. Championships win teams. And Minnesota is playing hella defense right now.
So, Nick, you agree. Good product right now.
Absolutely. I'm not a big, like I said, basketball regular season. Mm-hmm. But for the playoffs, like Willie was saying, I remember those days of LeBron and Steph Curry. Like, oh, they're going to be in the playoffs. It's like Christmas. Mm-hmm. You know it's coming around.
And you had to watch it.
Yeah, this time, I don't know what I'm getting for Christmas, and I'm glad.
That's the good part about it.
I want a surprise in the stocking. That's what I want. That's what I'm getting with this product. I'm getting a surprise in the stocking.
But I would love to hear for fans, along with your Titan thoughts, how you feel about the Predators. Barry will talk. He and Coach Bruno will talk later on today. I think, 4 o'clock?
I think the locker room is going to open just after a player-coach meeting at 4, and then around 5, give or take a few minutes, Barry Trotz and Andrew Burnett will address the media at the podium, basically. So,
all right. So you get a gamut of everything.
We're going to get it all today.
We'll get it all today. But I would love to hear what your thoughts. If we had an NBA team, would you pay more attention to the NBA during the season and especially during the playoffs? I think that's what the disconnect for a lot of people is. Because we don't have a team here in the city, then we don't follow it as much, even though we got our favorite teams. It may have come from another
city.
This
is usually the time of year that people start tuning in a little bit more to the playoffs. So just throwing that out there. 615-737-1025. I really want to get a lot of people involved on the text line, the call line, on a number of subjects today. Tim Hasselbeck will join us at the bottom of the hour, so that's coming up just around the corner. So stay tuned. Just getting it cranked here. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace here on 1025 The Game. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 plus and in Tennessee to bet. Quick answer to a text we got. Our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Can you guys help me figure out what we drafted, Titans meaning, thanks to the Kevin Byard trade last year? I remember Jared losing his mind. Imagine Jared losing his mind.
I've never heard that before.
That
never
must have been a really off day for Jared.
Losing your mind and Jared doesn't go together.
They must have heard that on a terrible April Fool's
so
show.
This would be on the list of days that Jared lost his mind, thinking it might have really helped our draft this year. Well, they got a 5th and the 6th for Kevin Byard. And so they turned that into, and this is, you know, only the beginning. We'll see what this turns into, but the 5th and the 6th round pick, Jarvis Brownlee, corner from Louisville. Mm-hmm. And then Jaquan Jackson, the roommate of Tajay Spears, right, from Tulane, the wide receiver. So we'll see what that turns into. Maybe nothing, but they would have gotten nothing had they held on to Kevin Byard, right? So only time will tell whether those draft picks turn into something. But you heard the music. It's time to bring in Tim Hasselbeck. And he is with ESPN. of course, head football coach at Ensworth, so doing the double duty, talking football with us as he always does. So, Tim, one thing, as we get through all of this post-draft analysis, that's where we are right now, roster evaluation, here's where the draft picks are, let's reassess what this team is. How do you see the Titans right now? Because I still think the consensus is going to have them. I think that what is fair is battling for third for the division title. But what is that accurate in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the general feeling is that I think, you know, certain issues have been addressed with the roster. I think people generally feel like, you know, the right moves were made. And I think the biggest question just still remains, okay, like how does Will Levis end up playing? Because when you look around the division, you say, all right, well, like Trevor Lawrence is gonna play well, and or that you think that he will. And then when you look in Houston, you know, that seems to be the darling that everyone wants to be excited about them based on how it went last year. And then, okay, Anthony Richardson is back throwing. You're probably more encouraged about his ability now than you were a year ago right after he was drafted. And so I think when you do all of that, you know, math, it's kind of easy to say, or like, what's the biggest question mark at quarterback in the division? And it's probably Will Levis, which is, I think, why when you forecast things out, people will have the Titans kind of earmarked where they have them earmarked.
Okay, so one thing that we've been kicking around a lot, because it's, I think it goes to what your philosophy is on Levis, which, as you said, is the central question to everything they do. If he pans out, then they're going in one direction. If he doesn't, they're going in a completely different direction. So supporting him is going to be important. But at the same time, you're trying to develop a roster. So I think it's a classic dilemma. You've got Boyd, the veteran wide receiver who's a free agent that has a past with the coach. You kind of know how he would fit. And you've also already spent money on two veteran receivers in Ridley and Hopkins. So it's tempting to say, give me the other guy. Then he'll have three veterans, and you really have a chance to support a young quarterback. And then you also have Treylon Burks, who is a third-year player who hasn't hit, hasn't come close to hitting. Availability is a big part of it. But one of the reasons you're trying to get more out of him is by changing the head coach and changing the offensive coordinator. So what's the right path to take? Would you rather, Tim, if you're the GM, have the extra veteran, or would you rather leave a little more space for Burks to try to make it happen?
I think you got to leave more space for Burks, because I think that you could probably, you know, just say, okay, been some injuries, just been lack of offensive production, quarterback play, whatever. So it's, I think in some ways it's probably reasonable to say we can't put it all on him. And I think that, I think you need to, like, to me, it feels like when you look at some of the additions that the Titans are gearing up for, you know, stepping on the gas with having a quarterback on a rookie contract, but not yet going all out for it because you don't know if he can play or not yet. And so the reason I say that is, like, listen, like, you just look at, you know, some of the additions, whether it's, you know, it's Pollard or Ridley, you know, the fact that, you know, Hopkins is back for another year, you're invested in the offensive line. Like, to me, it definitely feels like, all right, if Levis plays well, like, now that's your green light to go step on the gas. And it's probably on the defensive side of the ball as much as it's on the offensive side of the ball. But, like, that's what it feels like to me. And so I think it's premature to basically say, like, yeah, we're going to have three veteran wide receivers. Like, I don't know that I would go that route, you know, meaning, like, bring someone else in. That's why I think I would leave room for Treylon Burks.
We'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head coach at the Ensworth Tigers. Now, Tim, I'm going to get a little bit away from the Titans because I think we've sort of, you know, debated this and went through the Titans roster and whatnot as many times as we possibly can. But I want to focus on the other teams in AFC South. How difficult do you believe, because we see this a lot with teams in the NFL when they're at the bottom for so long and then they get a few draft picks. We saw with Jacksonville 2 years ago where they finally came on and ended up winning the division. We saw it last year in the Houston Texans. What is the biggest obstacle the next following season, say for Houston Texan? Because this is the team that many feel not only is going to win AFC South, but ultimately may be an AFC championship game.
Yeah, I think it is always interesting when we talk about just expectations, right? Mm-hmm. And so and managing the expectations like that I think is, you know, it is a little bit interesting. You know, we when you don't expect somebody to be good, and I don't care what anybody said, nobody expected, you know, the Texans to be good a year ago. I mean, they just, you know, they got it right with some wide receivers. I mean, just look about it with C.J. Stroud. Like, I would just say this. He threw for over 4,000 yards. So, like, now the expectations are going to be like, hey, he always throws for 4,000 yards. You know, he only threw 5 picks. So now the expectation is, well, he's not going to turn the ball over 10 times or more, right? And, like, then I just would also say this. You know, he threw 23 touchdowns. So, and I think this is interesting. Like, we've seen guys throw over twice that many touchdown passes in a season. Like, he was the offensive rookie of the year. He threw 23 touchdown passes. I'm not knocking his year. Had an incredible year. Did a great job. But there's no way that the expectations year in and year out are going to be that, like, you throw, you know, fewer than 25 touchdowns. Like, now the expectation is going to be like, hey, man, like, you're a 30-35-plus touchdown guy if, like, you're going to be the guy. So I think the biggest thing for a team, for a quarterback, for all that stuff is – just managing the expectations, because when people are expecting you to win, now all of a sudden you drop 2 games in a row, it can feel like the sky is falling. And you know that from being a player, like, you know, the locker room feels like a funeral home at that point. And so I think that's the biggest challenge is kind of the mental toughness through that with expectations.
Now, do you think they, you know, run away with this division? Because I'm looking at every other team below them, Jacksonville, still trying to figure out the offensive line. They got to replace Calvin Ridley. You don't know how the quarterback's going to look, even though he has immense talents. He still makes those mistakes, cringeworthy mistakes, sort of like Josh Allen at times. Mm-hmm. Then you got Indianapolis. They're, you know, nursing their starting quarterback back to health right now because of his injury. And then obviously the Titans. So these teams underneath the Houston Texans all have their warts, and I'm sure Houston has theirs as well. But which team you believe is closer to Houston in this division?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jacksonville probably, but you're right. Like, they've got legitimate, you know, issues and holes to fill. Like, and I think the other aspect of it is, like, a year ago when we were talking about the Colts, they had an unhappy running back, mm-hmm. and that was causing drama for their football team. And they drafted a quarterback that had 13 starts, and you had no idea if he would be any good playing in the pros. I mean, like, and so as we sit here, you know, today, look, I think we know a lot more about Anthony Richardson than we did a year ago. Now, he didn't play a ton, but he played some. And I think that, you know, there probably should be general excitement and optimism in terms of, you know, how he would play. Jonathan Taylor is not, you know, in some type of holdout. And I think most people feel like they drafted well. So, like, the Colts actually are a team that, like, probably most teams are not talking about as being one of the 2 best teams in the division. But, like, there's a chance they end up being the best team in the division. Hmm. Like, a decent chance.
Now, which one of these teams you believe is – and now I'm sort of getting outside the AFC South, just the AFC in general, because I think all of this still plays into how the Titans fare during the season. Which one of these teams, or teams, plural, do you think is headed downward? I look at teams like Buffalo because of them getting rid of trading Stephon Diggs, and now all of the pressure – is on Josh Allen. I look at a team like that with the head coach that is on a hot seat. They could be one of those teams that is going in reverse rather forward.
Yeah, I mean, look, when I look at teams, and I think there are a lot of teams, like when we look at the change that they have, like, you know, Baltimore's had significant change, but do they have the makeup to kind of, to deal with it? Think about the change Kansas City's had, lost all kinds of people around their quarterback, but like, you know, they deal with it. They get through it. I think teams, you know, when the leadership is good between head coach and quarterback, you know, they manage that change. They do a good job of dealing with that change. I think the teams that don't are the team, like, take this for example. Like, I think that Jalen Hurts is a great leader. I think he does an excellent job, you know, with leadership stuff, you know, for the Philadelphia Eagles. I think when you look at last year, I think Nick Sirianni kind of failed the team as a head coach just in terms of how he manages coordinators and all of that. And so, like, you know, it kind of felt like it was falling apart, and that's for a team that won 11 games. So, you know, I think there's so much turnover every year, and sometimes it's key guys, you know, from a stats and production standpoint. Sometimes it's key guys for other reasons, you know, it could be a coach. But I think that, you know, when you are strong in terms of, you know, having a guy that makes guys around him better, the quarterback, you know, or you have a coaching staff that does a great job of kind of relating to the guys that you do have and recreating something new since guys have changed. Like, that's the challenge each and every year, not just, hey, how much talent is returning, and if it's more, we're going to have more success.
We'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head coach of the Innsworth Tigers. Now, Tim, you guys had a, spring game this weekend. How did it go?
We had a little spring ball. Mm-hmm. D-Mace, we had, you know, the weather this time of year does not really like to cooperate, you know, so got to be careful. You know, my family's history with lightning strikes, and so when that happens, you get forced to move inside the gym. But it's been great to be out, get a little football in, even though it's the middle of track and baseball season for a lot of our kids. But it was good, man. It was really good. I'm still waiting for you to drop by practice. I don't know why that hasn't happened yet.
Oh, it will. It just couldn't happen Saturday. As much as I wanted to, I had to do an NFL alumni thing. You know how those things go. But I will be there. I will be a frequent face over at Innsworth, even though my kids graduated like 20 years ago from that school. I didn't know whether you guys stayed outside because it was, I think, it bad storms or weather. I didn't know whether you guys were able to finish it all or not.
What was it, Saturday, man? I think it felt like we got about 4 inches of rain in about 30 minutes. We're not afraid of the rain, but obviously yeah, it's tricky. It's tricky trying to thread the needle. And I actually got moved inside last night for the practice. And I've found myself now as a high school head coach, like, I check my weather app maybe more than, you know, in the last.
It's become one of your best friends, huh?
Yeah, it's like my new best friend now. I'm going to be a meteorologist, you know, by the end of this day.
Oh, good grief.
It's crazy. But it's a lot of fun, but definitely more fun when you can be outside.
Exactly.
Tim, before we let you go, this is something I think we talked about last year with Brock Purdy's arm injury. And this year I'm watching Joe Burrow going through the steps of recovery to his arm injury. But isn't it crazy? And I would love to know the science here, but you look at baseball right now, and they have an epidemic of arm injuries. They can't keep the pitchers on the mound. Pitchers are throwing harder than ever, and the arm just can't take it, right? And everybody's trying to figure out, how do we rein this in? But in football, you can have a bad injury, and it always seems like a guy is able to come back and be functional for the most part. Maybe you lose a little bit over time, but there aren't as many situations that I can recall through history where, like, well, he had Tommy John surgery, or he hurt his arm, he can't come back. But why is that? What's the science behind that?
I mean, you know, my guess on the science of it is, you know, you're throwing a heavier ball, you know, in football. And so, you know, like the whip action of throwing is not the same. It's just actually not the same amount of strain, you know, throwing a football as it is, you know, throwing a baseball. And, you know, you're a former baseball player, you kind of know that. I mean, that's why, you know, a guy pitches and look like, you know, you got mandatory rest for a guy that pitches, where, you know, in football, you get to training camp, like, and you used to, you know, you're throwing multiple times a day. So
that's,
you know,
crazy to me that it never seems to have a wear and tear.
Yeah.
Just the way the ball is shaped, the way that the science of it is. It's ironic because in football, you have all these other injury concerns for everybody.
Yeah, and I also think this, like, you know, you see guys, like, hey, you're on the 15-day DL because you have a blister on your fingers. You know what I mean? I think, you know, like, meanwhile, you know, Brett Favre's got a broken thumb. It's like, yeah, hey, just go throw the football.
Just tape it up. You know,
there is an element of that that's different. But I also think that there's also not the same precision, right? So it's not the same precision in terms of getting a ball to move while still throwing a strike. You know, is different than, you know, throwing a go route that a receiver who's an amazing athlete has the ability to adjust to, right? So it, I think there are a lot of components in terms of, like, the actual detailed, like, accuracy, you know, is not a, you know, it's not as big of a thing. So I think there are all of those factors. But, and I will tell you this, I had a conversation we were talking about on NFL Live, you know, later today. Like, the reality is, like, we do take some of these things for granted. Like, oh, hey, Burrow's, you know, wrist, yeah, he'll be fine. You know, Anthony Richardson's shoulder, yeah, he'll be fine. Because, Willie, to your point, guys typically have been fine. And, you know, like, Purdy is the example from a year ago. Like,
absolutely.
He's basically fine. And so, like, I do think, in, you know, sometimes we take it for granted that that's how it'll work, because it isn't always the case, but it seems to be the majority of the time it is that way.
Tim, great stuff as always, and we'll talk again next week.
All right, sounds good. See you guys.
All right, Tim Hasselbeck joining us here on 102.5 The Game. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. Caroline filling in for Jared this afternoon. All right, when we come back, we're gonna take some calls and texts from the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We've got a lot of questions that have unfolded, including, does Jared actually have a mind? We'll tell you what one of the texters actually said about that when we come back. I think you'll be amused. But we're talking a little NBA, a little football. We're going to hit the Predators hard during the noon hour. So get your Predators questions ready. I'll tell you that right now, because during the noon hour, we want to take it from all angles on what to do in this offseason. A lot of different ways it can go. Stay tuned. We're coming back. Uh-oh. We got a little Lionel Richie. Oh, it's taking me back. It's taking me back. Sing it, Lionel. There you go.
I'm already back.
I may or may not have karaoke did this song.
Come on now. If you didn't, something's wrong with you.
And I have to say,
had to.
I got the crowd going. I did. I got the crowd going.
Was this a Willie in college or Willie post-college?
It was post-college, okay. Because this was the celebration song in the locker room for the Predators about a decade ago.
Uh-huh.
And they beat the Red Wings in the playoffs, 2012. And this was the song. So I decided later that night in the celebration, let's bring it on. Let's go.
Willie's a party starter. I love it.
I got it going.
There you go, Willie. Come on now.
You know, in my mind, I was great. I just don't. I don't know if I would want to watch the tape and actually see how it was. But in my mind, it was great.
Well, typically in your mind, you sound just like
Lionel.
Lionel, you
just
sound
just like
exactly
him.
Like
I sound
Lionel
just
Richie,
like Lionel.
And you hit every tune.
Yeah.
But then reality sets in, and then they show what's actually going on.
Yeah.
And you sound like a cow, more than likely giving birth.
A cow. Or getting butchered, one of the two.
Exactly.
Well, what's the, is it Gilgis Alexander and Chet Holmgren, the guys
that
do the,
that commercial.
We see commercial every break. Like,
I don't think you would have been that good, though. They,
it's like,
they
it's
were
flat.
All right.
They're like, we're all right. Yeah. We're a little flat. We'll work on it. You know, I felt like maybe that could be me. I don't know.
You wasn't a little flat, Willie. You probably
way
was
flat.
A lot of flat.
Way
flat. Yeah.
But don't ruin the image of my mind.
Exactly.
Dude, it's 10 years
you had
ago,
it going. You thought you had the afro and everything.
I'm a legend of my own mind. Now, we're going to talk Preds. We want to get your questions going for the Predators, because we've laid out all these things. You're going to hear from Barry Trotz, but you're the GM. What direction do you want to see them go in the next hour? We got a couple of texts we want to get to. Remember, we had the texter earlier in the hour, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, saying he remembers Jared losing his mind about the Kevin Byard trade. He wanted us to remind him who they got, the fifth rounder and the sixth rounder. And a guy countered, Chuck says, to say Jared lost his mind is to imply that he had a mind to begin with. So, a little cheap shot at Jared. Sorry, Jared.
Well, he knows it's par for the course. He knows it's coming.
Yeah.
So, he loves it. He embraces it.
So, on that note, Nick, check this out. We're getting some information here. Am I seeing that this right, that the Titans are going to sign Boyd? Did that just go down?
Let's see.
Is that going down?
I think it we can find out very quickly here.
It looks like they did. This is according to Ari. We gotta have
Ari Merov?
Yeah, is that right?
33rd.
Is he legit?
Yeah, Ari, for sure. Yep, and
he says it's done.
Jeremy Fowler as well. The Titans are signing Tyler Boyd to a 1-year deal worth up to $4.5 million.
1-year deal.
We talked about the money yesterday, and I just didn't think if it was a 2-year $14 million deal like that, that made no sense to me for a guy that possibly is going to be your third, maybe even your fourth wide receiver. I understand now the 1 year up to $2 million. So I'm sure the base
up to $4.5 million.
So I'm sure the base is around 2.5, 3, somewhere around there. And then he can work his way up.
Are you surprised that it's that inexpensive?
It may be 3.5 that he's making. He can make up to 4.5, huh?
That's a better deal than I thought it would be. I thought there would be more money that would have to be invested. Mm-hmm. So we talked about one scenario yesterday, mm-hmm. that if it were upwards of about $7 million, I think Caroline threw out a $7 million mm-hmm. type of thing.
And those were numbers we were just throwing out.
We're just throwing them out there. That if you had a veteran wide receiver making $7 million sitting on the bench, if Treylon Burks beat him out, because the idea was you're creating competition, let's see who ends up being better, that would be an issue to have a veteran sitting on the bench, especially if he was not playing special teams. But at this price, if you had to eat the money, if it just didn't work out, and the good news might be instead that Burks blossoms, I could live with that. I could eat that money. So I'm not totally against this deal. I still would have the same question of, are you going to end up blocking Treylon Burks? But he's got to be unblockable, right? He's got to just be that good and find a way in there. So Boyd, at this price, seems like a pretty good bargain.
Yeah.
So, okay. I can live with that.
I think, when you sign a contract like this, to me, it's insurance. That's what it is. It's insurance in depth. That if Treylon doesn't, work out or doesn't play the way they want him to play or reach that potential or they see it and he's on the field, then Tyler Boyd would be the insurance policy for this year. Or, let's just be honest, one of these veteran wide receivers that they got, Ridley or Diop, if they go down.
Yeah, somebody goes down.
You need somebody else that has a considerable amount of snaps in this league and has played playoff football, and he's done both.
He has played for the Bengals, being the number 3,
exactly.
And done pretty well, and he's also had to slide up because Higgins has missed some time, right? Yeah. Even Ja'Marr Chase has missed some time.
Exactly.
And so
he's been able
to slide into that role and been a pretty solid pro.
Yeah, but I don't think he's equipped to be the 2 or the 3, the 2 or the 1.
Not ideally.
Sure. He's just not at that phase of his career at this point where he can be a 2. He was there possibly a couple years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, when he was Cincinnati's basically 1 before they drafted Higgins and then obviously Ja'Marr Chase. So to me, this is insurance and depth. For the Tennessee Titans, it's a low contract, low risk, high reward type of things with Tyler Boyd. And like you said, it gives Will Levis, another veteran guy, that if anything goes wrong, like if an injury occurs or something like that, even if it's an injury for a quarter, at least you have a Tyler Boyd now that can come in and fill in the space wherever he needs to.
I like the price.
Yeah.
If it were higher, I would be a little more concerned. I like the price. Mm-hmm. Andrew texted and says, we got Boyd for Aaron Brewer money.
Okay, well, basically, Andrew. Yeah.
Different position.
Yeah,
different position. Tougher than a $2 steak.
If he's tougher than a $2 steak, then we got a good thing with Tyler Boyd. But he needs to play like better than a $2 steak. That's what he needs to do.
All right, speaking of the text line, we're going to get into it a lot in the noon hour. We're going to get your Predators offseason questions. We'll circle back to the Boyd signing a little bit later in the show as well. So good news. The Titans have landed their target in Tyler Boyd as an extra veteran wide receiver. Stay tuned. Hour number two is coming up next. Your Predators offseason questions. There are plenty. We want to get the text and call line involved. We're coming back.